Good afternoon. My name is Susan Muirhead, and today I'll be reading part one of the News Gazette, dated for this date, Tuesday, August 8th, 2017. Let's begin with some of today's headlines. The first headline reads, First Report, Judicial Inquiry Board. Stegman's lectures under scrutiny. Judge to vigorously dispute complaint. This article is written by Mary Shank and is based out of Urbana. Appellate Court Justice Robert Stegman, that's S-T-E-I-G-M-A-N-N, of Urbana, said a complaint filed against him Monday by the State Judicial Inquiry Board for giving paid legal lectures to police officers and doctors is regrettable, embarrassing, and unnecessary, quote-unquote. I plan to vigorously dispute the board's complaint before the Illinois Courts Commission, Stegman told the News Gazette Monday, hours after being notified that the complaint would be filed. I intend to be represented by counsel. Stegman, 72, has known for 9 months that the inquiry board has been investigating him and has fully cooperated. Indeed, he supplied the JIB with all the information it asked for and more, including his background, who and what he teaches, how and when he's been compensated, as well as written evaluations by his audiences. Knowing that his paid lectures were under scrutiny, Stegman said he has invited JIB representatives to attend and has asked several times for quote-unquote guidance on what invitations the board thinks he should or should not accept. Stegman said the JIB did not respond. Stegman sent another letter to the JIB late last month asking for direction regarding an invitation to present a seminar in September for police officers in Champaign. Their guidance was to file a complaint, he said. The three-count complaint alleges that Stegman, a trial and appellate judge for 41 years, violated the Code of Judicial Conduct by using his office staff and equipment to solicit paid lecturing opportunities from law enforcement and medical groups and hospitals. In doing so, Stegman used the prestige of his judicial office as well as the court's resources to advance his private interests. This conduct also created a potential for an appearance that he is biased in favor of physicians and law enforcement with respect to matters involving those professions, the complaint said. Stegman denied any appearance of impropriety, supplying the board with 22 decisions in which he ruled against the state, a hospital, or a doctor, the classes the board suggests that Stegman appears to favor, no less than $24,300. Stegman has long been known for proudly and publicly, sharing his legal acumen with anyone who will listen, but especially those groups that can benefit from legal insights in their own professions. He counts police, prosecutors, criminal defense attorneys, doctors, law students, and radio listeners among his audiences over the years. The former prosecutor, circuit judge, and now appellate court judge for the 30 counties spanning the central part of Illinois, is also the author of a three-volume treatise on Illinois evidence law, which he updates annually and for which he is paid. Stegman noted that the Supreme Court has declared that a judge may engage in activities to improve the law, the legal system, and the administration of justice, and that he or she may be paid if the source of such payments does not give the appearance of influencing the judge in his or her judicial duties or otherwise give the appearance of impropriety. In short, the High Court has said the pay should not exceed a reasonable amount, and expenses should be limited to the actual cost of food, travel, and lodging. In its complaint, the inquiry board said that in May 2015, Stegman initiated contact with law enforcement organizations to give paid lectures, sending letters on official court letterhead. Between June 2015 and April 2016, the complaint said he sent 30 email solicitations and 96 letters to chiefs of medical societies and hospitals to present lectures on medical malpractice in exchange for honoraria. Those solicitations, the complaint said, resulted in 15 presentations in 2015 and 2016 by Stegman to police and another 9 to medical-related groups for a total of no less than $24,300 in excess of his judicial compensation. Stegman said the compensation for his police presentations was $1,250 per appearance for 7 hours of lecturing and the preparation for those. Appellate court justices in Illinois earn $211,416 a year. Stegman called his presentations well-received by the police and medical people. I get great response. The evaluations are off the charts, he said. There's no precedent. The complaint uses stinging language, including failed to conduct himself in a manner that promotes public confidence in the integrity and impartiality of the judiciary, failed to refrain from financial and business dealings that tended to reflect adversely on his impartiality, exploit his judicial position, and involve him in frequent transactions with persons likely to come before the court in which he serves, and failed to refrain from assuming an active role in the management of a business. I'm a judge, but I'm not their spokesperson, Stegman said, of the Illinois judiciary. I'm just offering my personal opinions. I'm accused of doing something where the Supreme Court has given careful attention, and in 2002 they said I could, he said. Now the JIB is saying, you can't run a business. There's no precedent for how much is too much. I spoke to a lot of cops and a lot of doctors. What's reasonable compensation, he asked. I don't think I've done anything wrong. It would have been better if I hadn't used court stationery, he admitted. But he's unapologetic about relying on his office assistant, Becky Gordon, with him more than 36 years, to help produce the materials he uses in his teaching and the legal treatises he authors. Of course I use my staff, said the man, who dictates and writes notes in longhand for Gordon to type. Stegman said it's unpleasant to be lumped in with other judges who have had affairs in office or have been found mentally unstable. Still, there's few places he'd rather be than behind his desk in a pile of paper. It's a wonderful job. It's an honor and privilege to serve as a judge. I like to think I'm doing good work, he said. And here's an accompanying article, Judicial Accountability. Review Board can reprimand, suspend, remove judges. This is a short follow-up to that by Jim Day, D-E-Y. The drafters of the Illinois Constitution contemplated the possibility that allegations of misconduct would be alleged against members of the state's judiciary, so they established a separate, independent process in the Constitution to address the issue. Acting in the role of prosecutor is the state's Judicial Inquiry Board, the JIB. Composed of 4 non-lawyers, 3 lawyers, and 2 judges, the 9-member body reviews complaints and determines whether or not charges should be filed. The JIB has an executive director, Kathy Twine, T-W-I-N-E, and trial counsel, John Gallo of Chicago. Acting as the jury in a public trial is the Illinois Courts Commission, a separate 7-member body that consists of 5 judges and 2 citizens, Illinois Supreme Court Chief Justice Lloyd Carmeier, that's K-A-R-M-E-I-E-R, heads that body, and he's joined by 2 appellate court judges, 2 circuit judges, and 2 citizens. Penalties for wrongdoing range from reprimand and suspensions to removal from the bench. The most recent judicial misconduct case from Central Illinois involved 2 McLean County judges, Scott Drazewski, that's D-R-A-Z-E-W-S-K-I, and Rebecca Foley, who ran afoul of judiciary integrity rules after they became involved in an extramarital affair. Drazewski, ultimately was suspended for several months while Foley was censured. The next headline reads, Green Street Construction. Budget impasse delayed repairs. Green likely to remain closed past beginning of fall semester. This article is written by Julie Worth and is based out of Urbana. A week-long construction shutdown in early July, courtesy of state lawmakers, means Green Street in front of the Illini Union will probably remain closed to through traffic until September 1st, a week after University of Illinois students return en masse. The original plan had been to reopen the north half of Green Street between Wright Street and Goodwin Avenue to two-way traffic on August 25th, 3 days before the start of classes on August 28th. But work on the multimodal corridor enhancement project, known as MCOR, along that section of Green and another further west had to shut down June 30th, the end of the fiscal year, because of the budget impasse. Contractors swung back into action July 7th after a budget agreement was reached, but the episode put the projects about 2 weeks behind. It took several days for crews to fill in gaping holes in the street and secure the sites before the shutdown, then go back and undo that work so they could resume construction, said Stacy DiLorenzo, planning coordinator for U of I Facilities and Services. Crews have been working 10-hour days, 6 days a week since then to make up time, but they're still about a week behind, city and U of I officials said. DiLorenzo said 2 lanes of green between Wright and Matthews Avenue and all of the entrances and parking areas for the Illini Union should reopen by September 1st. It won't be in time for move-in day, August 24th, or for the first day of classes, but it will be very, very soon afterwards, she said. Greg Schonkweiler, Schonkweiler, assistant city engineer in Urbana, said it's still possible contractors could make up time. He said they'll know more in a couple of weeks. Further west in Champaign, parts of Green Street will remain closed to through traffic between Neal Street and 2nd Street throughout the fall semester, under the original schedule for the multi-phased work. But 1st Street should reopen well before move-in day, possibly later this week, said Assistant City Engineer Chris Sokolowski, that's S-O-K-O-L-O-W-S-K-I. It's now closed to northbound traffic between John and Green Streets. The city and contractors have taken great pains to keep access to businesses along Green and other nearby streets open, he said. 1st Street reopens this week. As of Monday, crews had opened up a bit more of Green east of Locust Street, providing access from 1st Street to the driveway of University Center Retail Plaza at 33 to 49 East Green Street in Champaign. Businesses on the south side of Green are also accessible via John and Locust Streets, he said. The plan is also to keep access open to Chestnut Street businesses north of Green, such as Fat City, from the Neal Street end as long as we possibly can, Sokolowski said. Traffic is blocked in both directions at the railroad viaduct just east of Neal, but pedestrians can get through, he said. Once 1st Street reopens to two-way traffic later this week, contractors will close the intersection at Green and 2nd Street, Sokolowski said. Crews are already working on Green between 1st and 2nd, he said. They will gradually move east nearly to 4th Street, where a road improvement project several years ago ended, he said. That work will continue through early December, he said. The original completion date for all of the pavement work in that stretch, street and sidewalks, was December 1st, but that may be pushed back because of the state budget stoppage, he said. The intent is to still have it all wrapped up by the end of the calendar year, he said. Landscaping and other finishing work would continue in the spring, he said. A good 3 weeks left. Next spring, contractors will also begin work on the next phases of the project. White Street in Champaign and Wright Street between White and Springfield Avenue, which is scheduled to continue through December 2018. Later, Wright between Springfield and Armory Avenue through the core of the campus will also be improved. And on the Urbana end of Green, crews will continue working through the fall between Matthews and Goodwin and then on past Lincoln, almost to Busey Avenue. A later phase in 2019 will involve the section between Busey and Ray Street, Schonkweiler said. One factor that's helped contractors make up time, even if farmers aren't too happy about it, little significant rainfall in July and early August. My grass hates it. My trees and plants hate it. But I'm really glad the rain has held off, DiLorenzo said. Schonkweiler estimated that the concrete work around the Illini and Union is about 70% complete, which includes the street, sidewalks, new raised bike lanes, and the revamped circle drive in front of the Union. We've got at least a good 3 weeks of work left, he said. Pedestrian path possible. Schonkweiler said contractors will make adjustments if needed to ensure that students can get through the construction zone on Green by opening a north-south path for pedestrians from the Union to the engineering quad. That's the heaviest pedestrian crossing in Champaign-Urbana, he said. You've got a whole lot of students moving through there, he said. Students are already trickling back into town as apartment leases begin. For the big move-in day on August 24th, the U of I is directing parents of new students around the construction areas, DiLorenzo said. A map on the housing website advises parents coming into town to use other main routes to residence halls such as Kirby Avenue, Lincoln Avenue, and 4th Street. It is not directing anybody to go anywhere near Green Street, he said. Bus service will continue to be rerouted off Green Street until next spring, DiLorenzo said. Planners want to wait until the street fully reopens with a new MTD bus stop in front of the Union, she said. DiLorenzo urged drivers to patronize businesses in Campustown as usual, but not to use Green between Wright and Goodwin simply as a thoroughfare. If you don't have to go through that section, don't, she said. The next headline reads, Immigration. Chicago sues over sanctuary city threat. This article is written by the Associated Press and is based out of Chicago. Mayor Rahm Emanuel has taken his fight against President Donald Trump's immigration policies to court, with Chicago becoming one of the first cities Monday to sue over what many U.S. cities argue are illegal bids to withhold public safety grants from so-called sanctuary cities. Hours later, Attorney General Jeff Sessions hit back at Chicago, saying the Trump administration will not simply give away grant dollars to city governments that proudly violate the rule of law and protect criminal aliens at the expense of public safety. Estimates vary, but there are thought to be about 300 jurisdictions, cities, and counties with sanctuary-like policies. Among the other bigger U.S. cities with such policies are New York and Philadelphia. The next headline reads, Commemorating 44, Ronner signs law to honor Obama's birthday. This article is also based out of Chicago and is written by the Associated Press. The home state of former President Barack Obama will commemorate his birthday under a new law. Governor Bruce Ronner has signed a plan honoring the 44th president's birthday on August 4th. It won't be an official state holiday, rather a day to honor Obama. The law notes Obama's efforts to protect Americans' rights and build bridges across communities, quote-unquote. Obama began his political career in the Illinois Senate in 1997. He served there until his election to the U.S. Senate in 2004. The measure takes effect next year. Now let's take a quick look at our weather forecast for the next week. This is provided to us by On the Weather Front, which is written by Greg Soulge. That's S-O-U-L-J-E. So today, the temperature should be 78, mostly sunny, overnight partly cloudy. Wednesday, the high will be 81, the low will be 57, mostly sunny, overnight increasing clouds. Thursday, 82 degrees, that's the high, the low is 61, partly sunny, a shower and thunderstorm in spots before noon, more so late. Friday, the high is 83, the low is 62, and it will be partly cloudy. And on Saturday, the high is 81, the low will be 63, increasing clouds, an isolated shower and thunderstorm in spots before noon, more so in the afternoon. The next headline reads, 15th Congressional District. Shimkus, no reason not to seek re-election. This article is written by Tom Kachik and is based out of Georgetown. U.S. Representative John Shimkus, that's S-H-I-M-K-U-S, who once pledged to term limit himself to no more than 6 terms in office, said Monday night he will run for a 12th term in 2018. There's no expectation that I'm not going to run, the Collinsville Republican said Monday night after appearing with Agriculture Secretary Sonny Perdue at the Georgetown Fair. I'm not announcing it formally here, but there's no reason why I wouldn't. We've had a very good legislative year, personally, with bills about brownfields and the Safe Drinking Water Act, ozone, and I'm trying to get the nuclear waste bill done. I've got enough on my plate to make it very interesting, said Shimkus. Shimkus's nuclear waste bill would revive a long-dormant proposal to store waste from nuclear power plants at a single repository at Yucca Mountain in Nevada. Nuclear waste now is stored on-site at the nation's nuclear plants, and the nuclear power industry has pushed for years to establish a federal waste dump. I'm in a great position now where I can really move legislation. I've been fighting this battle for 20 years, he said of the Nevada nuclear waste plan. Why would I walk away now when I'm so close to having success? The House Energy and Commerce Committee, of which Shimkus is a ranking member, approved his nuclear waste bill 49-4. In an era when people think things aren't getting done, that's something that has eluded us for a long time, Shimkus said. Shimkus accompanied Perdue to 3 stops around Illinois on Monday, where they talked about the next farm bill, and he heard from farmers about trade, regulation, and other concerns. Perdue said his tour of Illinois was part of a trip through 5 Midwestern states. It's the heartbeat and the backbone of American prosperity, and the good news is we've got a president from New York City who gets that, Perdue said. My commitment to the farmers of America is you do what you do best. You grow it, and we're going to sell it. Perdue was awarded an inscribed director's chair and a lifetime pass to the Georgetown Fair. Shimkus said that with the Trump administration opening more federal lands in western states to coal mining, Illinois coal industry may be as strong as it's going to be. All I know is that the war on coal is over, he said. I don't think you're going to see the coal miners mining as it was in the 60s or 70s, but we're producing more coal this year than last year, and it will probably stabilize the market for the short term. It means that the rest of our coal mines won't close down. 3 Democrats in the huge 15th Congressional District have created campaign committees to challenge Shimkus in the overwhelmingly Republican area. Shimkus, the most senior member of Illinois' congressional delegation, also said he hasn't heard whether the Trump administration is close to announcing a new U.S. attorney for the Central District of Illinois. The next headline reads, Carle Foundation Hospital, Small Baby Unit. For smallest of premature babies, The environment is so important to ward off neurodevelopmental delays. This article is written by Deborah Pressey and is based out of Urbana. The lights are low, the sounds are hushed, and for the tiny preemies here, it may well be the next best place to still being inside their moms. This is the new small baby unit at Carle Foundation Hospital, where the smallest and most fragile premature infants are now spending their first weeks in the world. It's an environment designed to mimic the warm, dark, quiet places inside the womb, free of the brighter lights and louder sounds they'd been exposed to even in the neonatal intensive care unit. Light and sound can subject these tiniest of babies to a sensory overload and can impact their development, according to Carey, that's C-A-R-E-Y, Gade, G-A-E-D-E, the neonatal nurse practitioner who led the charge for Carle's new small baby unit. The environment is so important because the babies, their brains are still developing outside of mom, she said. This new 6-bed unit opened early last month, 16 days after Polly and Dale Coulter of Paris had their first child at Carle. Weighing in at 2 pounds, 8 ounces, Will Coulter was the first baby placed in the new small baby unit, according to Carle. He's since doubled his weight since his birth and has been moved back into the NICU until he's able to go home, according to Polly Coulter. Her son's condition improved dramatically in the special unit for small babies, Coulter said. He began sleeping better, opening his eyes more, and having less breathing difficulty, she said. He started gaining weight faster. He was calmer, she said. The survival of very low birth weight preemies has improved in neonatal intensive care units, but many surviving babies are discharged with neurodevelopmental delays and/or chronic medical conditions, according to research published in 2015 in the journal Pediatrics. The researchers concluded very low birth weight infant outcomes improved in small baby units. Despite the complexity of illness in extremely preterm infants, our experience reinforces how we do it matters, and a gentle approach of less is more is often best, the authors wrote. The launch of the Carle Small Baby Unit included a visit by Carle staff to the Helen DeVos Children's Hospital in Grand Rapids, Michigan, where Small Baby Unit has been in operation for more than 2 years, plus new staff training at Carle, Gade said. A specialized team works in the unit around the clock. Polly Coulter said she wasn't due to deliver her son until September 12th. She was airlifted to Carle from Sarah Bush Lincoln Health Center when she went into premature labor. She's enjoyed being able to have a hand in her son's care even while he was in the small baby unit, she said. She also happily reported Will had his first bottle feeding on Monday, one of the milestones he'll need to reach before he can be released from the NICU and go home is drinking 3/4 of each bottle and taking every feeding, she said. Carle's small baby unit is intended for babies who are born at least 30 weeks gestation, Gade said. Term babies are born at 37 to 40 weeks. There have been more than a dozen babies born at Carle who fit the criteria for the new unit, and it's been consistently full, she said. There's also a curtained-off transition space in the NICU that can be used for small baby unit overflow. A cell phone-free zone where conversation can be whispered only, the small baby unit can be an initial adjustment for the parents, Gade said. But once they've gotten in there, they really liked it, she said. And now, top of the morning, something to get you going today, courtesy of Jim Rosso. The Champagne Exchange Club meets on Mondays at O'Charley's, but on August 21st, the plan is to postpone the weekly luncheon to allow club members to observe the total solar eclipse that afternoon. What a strange Monday it should be, weather permitting, as many of us venture outside for a peek. Where will you be that day? Email us at newsgazette.com, as we'd love to tell your story and run your pictures. Until then, I hope you enjoy our coverage, which will intensify beginning Sunday with Melissa Murley's profile of a pair of local eclipse chasers. And here's a tally of our online audience, what was trending last week at newsgazette.com, which in a 7-day period ending Sunday saw 1,099,708 page views. The three top stories were, 1, Champaign police seek motive in city's second fatal shooting of 2017. 2, Urbana man convicted of murder in 2014 shooting. 3, appeals court orders Savoy man resentenced again for killing brother. The three top sports stories were, 1, Florida duo picks Illinois. 2, Lauren Tate, Illini could soon be tapping into the business of selling beers. And 3, Illini extend offer to Griffin. The three top videos were, 1, Underwood, a great summer. 2, Illini training camp 2017, great job by the defense. And 3, Illini training camp 2017, we saw some improvement. The three top photo galleries were 1, U of I Football Camp 2017 Day 1, number 2, U of I Football Camp 2017 Day 2, and 3, Twin City Golf Championship Round. The three top podcasts were 1, Tate Lines, Conversation with Dave Downey, 2, Saturday Sports Talk from August 5th, 2017, and 3, News Gazette Sports Page for July 31st, 2017. And now a look at our area history. In 1917, the last one-third of the men ordered to report for examination under the Selective Service appeared at the local board's office on Wednesday. It is probable that the names of those accepted and rejected will be made public in a few days. Men examined are being processed at about 15 per hour. In 1967, Urbana Mayor Stanley Weaver on Monday expressed opposition to liquor sales on Sundays. Several liquor license holders have said they hope they won't have to lose their only day off, Weaver told the city council. In 2002, Northern Champaign County is another step closer to getting a second Interstate 57 interchange. Speaking before Rantoul business and community leaders, U.S. Senator Dick Durbin, a Democrat from Springfield, said he would work with U.S. Representative Tim Johnson, a Republican from Urbana, to secure federal approval for an interstate exit south of Rantoul. Both Rantoul Mayor Neil Williams and Thomasboro Mayor Tony Grillo said the additional access to I-57 would improve economic development and fire protection for residents. In international history, today's highlight. On August 8, 1974, President Richard Nixon, facing damaging new revelations in the Watergate scandal, announced he would resign the following day. And on this date, in 1815, Napoleon Bonaparte set sail for St. Helena to spend the remainder of his days in exile. The next headline reads, Rantoul's Winding Lane Neighborhood, Police Looking into Multiple Shooting Reports. This article is written by Dave Hinton and is based out of Rantoul. Police are investigating reports of multiple shots fired over 3 days in the Winding Lane neighborhood. No injuries were reported. Lieutenant Jeff Wooten, W-O-O-T-E-N, said two addresses were involved. Police responded at 4 a.m. Friday to the 200 block of Winding Lane, where officers were told shots had been fired at a home and a vehicle parked in the driveway. Wooten said 10 to 15 shots total were fired. At 9:50 p.m. the next day, police got a report of shots fired in the 100 block of Winding. In that case, an unknown number of shots were fired into a vehicle. And at 11:40 p.m. Sunday, 3 or 4 shots were fired at the same house in the first case, Wooten said. He said the same weapon was not used in all three incidents. People were at home all three times, Wooten said, but there was nothing in the report to indicate anyone was in close proximity to the gunfire. The next headline reads, Thomasboro Grocery, Rantoul man charged in attempted robbery. This article is written by Mary Shank and is based out of Urbana. Bond has been set at $7,500 for a Rantoul man charged with 2 felonies and an attempted robbery Sunday at a Thomasboro business. Jacob Peters, 22, who listed an address in the 200 block of Frost Avenue, was arraigned Monday on charges of aggravated robbery and possession of a stolen vehicle. The robbery charge alleges that about 4 p.m. Sunday, Peters entered Thomasboro Grocery on Commercial Street, put items on the counter, then returned to his car. He then came back in with his hand in his sweatshirt pocket and told the clerk he had a gun and wanted money. Not believing him, the clerk touched his sweatshirt to see if there was a gun, then reached below the counter, indicating that he might be reaching for a gun to defend himself. Peters then ran. The clerk gave a detailed description of the would-be robbery and the car to Champaign County Sheriff's deputies who stopped the car nearby. Peters admitted that he tried to scare the clerk into giving him money, but claimed the man owed him money. The car Peters was driving belonged to his sister, who had loaned it to their mother earlier to take to work. It was missing from her mother's job on Friday. Both charges against Peters are Class 2 felonies, carrying penalties ranging from probation to 3 to 7 years upon conviction. He was ordered back in court on September 5th. I'm Susan Muirhead, and this has been Part 1 of the News Gazette, dated for this date Tuesday, August 8th, 2017. We'll resume with Part 2 of the News Gazette shortly, so stay tuned. We thank you very much for listening. We hope you have a wonderful day.